that I'm still at sleeping mode back in Singapore. So that's partly the reason why I've chosen this really elementary topic. I hope you will like it. At least you can really relax. As what has pointed out by one of the referees, this can be just an academic exercise of graduate students. Well, the reason I call it average value problems is compared with initial value problems, okay? So, this term is probably invented by me, sorry. Well, there's actually some, story about this. About 10 over years ago, we found this representation in one of our earlier paper with Professor Whedon, when we tried to study sharp estimate for one-dimensional Poincaré inequality. Okay, so this is actually the crucial integral representation. Okay, so as you can see that when V happens to be the delta measure at A, then you get the usual integral representation for initial value problem. Okay, so if you want, you can treat this as a green function, except that this is the one-dimensional one, and it is much it has very simple format. Okay. Okay. So, I chose to call it probability measure. Actually, it should be a Borel measure with total measure equal to 1. Okay. So, but it's easier this way. Okay. So, if you try to recall, here are some standard assumptions when we have this initial value problem. Okay. Now, of course, nowadays, if you try to dig out the standard textbook, they will have a constant L instead of WX. So you have to, if you want to find this form, you have to dig the earlier versions of ordinary differential equations. Okay. For example, Coddington in the 1950s. Okay, so, now, to make my paper even easier, I considered space of continuous functions instead of LP spaces. Part of the reason is, of course, I wanted to make look more like those students can find in the textbook. Okay. And to spice it up a little bit, we also look at these Laplace equations. But of course, actually, at the end, it is still ordinary differential equations because we are talking about symmetric solutions. Okay, so I'm definitely not expert in ordinary differential equations. You can say that this is my, side interest. So when I realized that integral representations, trying to find some application for it, I thought, there must be somewhere that I can find in the literature. I can. Okay. So what happened is, somewhere during the line, I give this problem to a student of mine. Unfortunately, nothing much has been done. Okay, so eventually I say, okay, let's spend some time working on it. And so, what happened is, of course, this problem that I call average value problem include the initial value problem, include things like delay equations, boundary value problem for higher dimensions, higher order ordinary differential equations. Okay. So at first I had no luck, since, as I say, I'm definitely not expert in ordinary differential equations. So I look everywhere. Okay, took me quite a while to realize that something quite general has been done. Is that they call it functional boundary value problems. As you can see that this is actually more general, because we know that any bounded linear functions, this L should be a bounded linear function. Okay. From on this space, give rise to a sign, Borah measure. Okay. So we restrict to probability measures, to be exact, probability Borah measure. Well, of course, this must be a special case. But I was pretty surprised to find out that. Let me see what happened. Okay. None of those studies, well, at least I can't find, include what we call parallel results to the case of initial value problems. And of course, well, after digging a while, I realized that it just cannot be, because we have these very simple examples that tell us that you need to restrict the measures that you are talking about. Okay, otherwise, you don't hope for this, what we call assistant and uniqueness theorem in general. Okay. Well, as I promised you, I only make use of really elementary trick, standard theorems that you can find, like intermediate value theorem. Okay. Oh, by the way, the techniques here can be easily generalized to, higher dimension or even vector value, case. But of course, vector value case that would be a bit out of reach for most graduate students. Okay. So let us recall some of these what we call classical theorems, but you probably will not find in standard textbook for undergraduate students, because nowadays they have simplified most of the time. So instead of these what we call Carrier-Chiari conditions, well, you have something simpler than that. Okay. But well, this is actually within reach to our graduate students, of course. And instead of this constant L, again, let us replace this constant L by WX, and actually the same argument leads to that, so there's no reason to keep it as L. Okay. Okay. And instead of talking about distributive solutions or weak solutions, I decided to just look at absolutely continuous solutions. Okay. After all, if you are looking at classical Levet ladder space, a classical Sobolev space on, and the case n equal to 1, they are all absolutely continuous. Okay. Okay, so so this just now the one is an assistant result, and this is the what we call uniqueness result. Okay, so well, these are actually well pretty well simple exercise that you can do it with the well the same techniques as what you teach your student in a standard ordinary differential equations course. Okay, so these are things that you are already well known. Okay. So at 2000, when I was very naive, so okay. So basically we cook out these simple applications of that representation formulas. Okay. So this is our first attempt to average value problem. Okay, so this is it handles these what we call standard assumptions for the functions. Okay, and okay, with this complicated guy here. Okay, okay, which actually is the what we call the sub constants in the Poincaré inequality from LP to L1. Okay, so you control LP functions by L1 derivative. Okay. Okay, so and then here are some well simple machinery. Okay, so there's no trick at all. All you need to do is just modify Picard's iteration. Okay, nothing unusual. Okay, but what happened is this, of course, later on I tried comparing this to classical theorem. Putting my Wx as equal to L, okay, and realize that I need these things to be less than 1, which is obviously, well, too much to ask for, too restrictive, okay. So, as I promised you, what I managed to get is well, we show that assistant and uniqueness theorem for average value problems holds under exactly the same assumptions, okay, as what you expect for ordinary differential equations with initial value problem. Okay. Well, very elementary two. Schauder fixed point theorem, intermediate value theorem, and the integral representations that I mentioned at the beginning, okay, which work as a Green function, of course. And unfortunately, intermediate value theorem only work for R1, okay. So you can't generalize this to Rn, okay. Okay, so first of all, this is the assistant results, okay, which looked almost the same, okay, as you expect for an initial value problem. And then we also have what we call continuous dependence of average value problem, average value, which looked like this, okay. I can't fine tune it. Okay, this is the last line. Okay. And Let me point out that we would definitely need this to be finite. So in the case that when Wx is a constant, it just means that that constant is finite. Okay, and for this finite, okay, you will get this lambda. Okay, let me remind you what is this lambda. Okay, this is the complicated stuff here. Okay, where we require this lambda to be less than 1, but I told you that, well, this is absolutely unnecessary. Okay, so here's what I say. Actually, all you need is lambda less than infinity, okay, instead of 1. Okay. So as long as lambda less than infinity, the WAB, I mean, the measure of AB will be less than infinity. By a simple observations, just use Hodel's inequality. Okay. And of course, it is essential that we need this to be finite. Okay, so just look at this simple, well, examples here. You see that it won't work if the W is not L1. Okay. So, and we can combine the above two theorems. One is existence, another is uniqueness. Then you get this, what we call existence and uniqueness theorem, just as ordinary differential equations. Okay. And we can also do something. Well, we also have this, of course. And these things, of course, come from, initial value problem. Okay, and then I have something slightly different from above. So instead of looking at the standard norm of L infinity in the in a space of continuous functions, we look at L Q mu. Okay. Now, of course, you could have chosen your, well, sorry, I think this one should be T, since I never define what is Q. So this should be T, okay. Okay, LP mu. Of course, you could have chosen P equal to infinity and mu equal to 1, then this is the usual assumption. Then I say, okay, then what for? Okay. Well, let me assure you that by allowing you with more flexibility, you can actually apply to different cases. Okay. So, so once again, let me remind you that these, weird things here, okay. Actually, give you the sharp constant for this Poincaré inequality. Okay, so in case p equal to infinity and mu equal to 1, it is quite easy to compute. Okay, that you see that the sharp constant is this. Okay, and so, 1.11. Let me see. Oh yeah. Okay. So here, the f here, okay, is no longer a function. Now I'm assuming that this is actually a mapping, a continuous operator from space of continuous function to L1. Okay, so that gives us, well, some flexibility in the machinery for differential equation. Sometimes when you have a machine, okay, which manage to compress space of continuous function to L1 functions, then you can also talk about the differential equations, okay, and solve it. Okay. So, as a result, we can, talk about, say, like functions of this, like this, okay, in your average value problem, or you can look at delay differential equations like that. Okay, so it's just the same kind of machinery. And then, I just try to make it look a bit more difficult by introducing the Laplacian operators. But indeed, as I say, there's no big deal because I'm assuming that our function is symmetric, okay, rotational symmetric, and therefore, in fact, it's just one variable, and therefore, it's actually a second order ODE. Okay. So, so first of all, I just recall the Schroeder's fixed point theorem, okay, and then look at these representations. They come directly from our Green functions, as what I mentioned. Okay, so the Schroeder fixed point theorem basically guarantee that. Okay. As long as you choose your bound, okay, these, weird bound here, okay, just to make sure that you will map the space of functions back to that same convex subset, okay, so that you can apply your Schroeder fixed point theorem. So, they're pretty elementary, as I say. Okay. And, the proof is actually very standard form, straightforward. We just use Ascoli-Arzelà theorem to prove that our target set is pre-compact. Of course, if you are trying to look at distributive solutions, then you need compact embedding of Sobolev spaces. Okay, but no problem. But I decided to keep it simple here, so I only look at Ascoli-Arzelà theorem and space of continuous functions. Okay, so it is quite easy to verify that the way we define our F naught, okay, is closed and convex, and we set out such that our T is continuous and such that it is what we call equi continuous and uniformly bounded, so you can apply Ascoli-Arzelà theorem. Okay. And one example of that type of what I call operators, of course, is when the operator is just a function like that, then this is of course one operator. Okay, and then I decided to extend a little bit, okay, of our probability measures. Okay. So by the way, all the measures here are Borel, okay, even though I never say it. Okay. Now there is a big difference between probability measure and assigned measure. Of course, probability measures, first of all, I'm saying that, it is a non-negative measure. It's actually just non-negative measures. sine measures, well, it's just a difference of two non-negative measures. Okay? But now, if your sine measure happens to have measure zero on the interval AB, then there's no hope you can get anything, because it is not going to give you any information at all. Okay? So it is also impossible for you to derive Poincaré inequality using the sine measure average. Okay, that sine measure. But in general, as long as your sine measures is non-zero on the, okay, so I say as in theorem 1.1, so this is my I'm assuming this, okay. And this V naught is such that it will give you the sharp constant in the Poincaré inequality. Okay, so if you choose it this way, then we will still be able to get the what we call assistance and uniqueness theorem using a very standard technique, pickers, iterations, okay. Or you can use Barnard contraction theorem. So these bound come, well, actually pretty easy, so I must well show you the proof here. Okay. So, as I mentioned earlier, the only thing that you need is to derive this, and the rest are very standard. All you need to do is just, well, work with it. Okay, the machinery are there and they are elementary. Okay, so let's just recall how to, well, arrive these representations. Okay, well, it's easy, but I guess there must be some reasons why the ODE people didn't find it out before me, or it's already been found, such that I can't find it in the literature. I have no ideas. That might be one of the reasons my paper was with the editor for more than 4 years. I was hoping that they tell me that, hey, look, this is already done. Why are you doing this? Okay, so first of all, of course, this using average, we have this thing. Okay. Now, but I have to warn you that this is actually an abuse of notations. Okay. So the problem is this: when the measure is absolutely continuous, there's no problem in writing your interval as AB. Okay. Now the problem is this: when you write these as A to B, are you talking about the open interval AB, or are you talking about the closed interval AB, or are you talking about half open, half closed interval? Well, there's no difference if the measure happens to be absolutely continuous. Okay? But it does make a difference. Okay? When the measure is not absolutely continuous. For example, when it's a delta measure, it will be disaster. Okay, so, well, this, when I write this AB, actually means the closed interval. Okay, but, well, this to here is okay, Because we are assuming that y to be absolutely continuous. Okay. Now, the next step is actually, as what I say, well, I cheat a little bit. Okay. So you have to be careful that what do you mean by ax and xd? Okay. It has to be disjoint. If it's not disjoint, you can't have this equality. Okay. But, well, you realize that they will not give you any problem at all with the moment you reach here, okay? Because now you are back to Leibniz. Okay. You have absolutely continuous measures here. Okay, this is dt is just the usual Leibniz measure. Okay. So well, we have this integral representation, and it works not just for non-negative measure v, it also works for sine measure v. Okay? But of course, provided you don't divide by zero, if you divide by zero, then this thing is just rubbish. And then, well, it is now very easy. So the moment you have the green functions, all you need to do is find a fixed point. Okay, so you define this as your operator and show that you can apply Schelder fixed point theorem. Okay, or Banach fixed point theorem, whatever you like. Okay, but of course, it's easier for the student to apply Banach contraction theorem. But Schelder fixed point theorem is more general. Okay. So here is what I call it elementary. So you only look at this estimate. Okay. So well, we just apply our iterations. Okay. And we are, and just move this stuff to the left, and then it give you the continuous dependence of of average conditions. Okay, so of course you can also apply this what we call iterations. Okay, this is Picard's iterations. No big deal. Okay, so but I decided to change things a little bit. Okay, so instead of the usual point-wise estimate, okay, I see that well, actually one can replace the usual point-wise estimate with this, okay, essential soup. Okay, and with that, we will be able to handle some of these delay equations and some of those weird type of measurable function f, like what I mentioned earlier. Okay, let me see. Okay, sorry. Which is this type. Okay, you can also deal with this type of functions. Okay, it will work. Okay, so I call it Lipschitz type conditions. So it seems that it's slightly different. Okay. So let me remind you that these f may not be a mesh, may not be a function. It can be just what we call an operator which net continuous function to L1 functions. Okay. Then we have exactly the same estimate as in initial value problem. Okay. Well, the proof is actually very easy. The only problem is I can't find a good reference, or I can't find the exact reference, so I have to, well, work it out a bit. Okay. But, well, it's basically the same ideas. Mm-hmm. No big deal. Okay. So for example, this stuff, okay, after you get to this, you can just use Gronwall's inequality. Okay. Now, if you want something more elementary, you can do this, just iterate. Okay. Repeat n times, then you get the same estimate. Okay. I guess students probably love this better than Gronwall's inequality. They never understand why these Gronwall's inequalities are like that. Okay, so we get this, estimate. And then, okay, for the uniqueness, we can prove it by Banach contraction theorem. Okay, so here is a demonstration that if you choose a different norm, okay, you are going to make a difference. So let's use this norm. Okay, so on the same space of continuous function, you choose this norm. Of course, you have to show that this is still a Banach space, okay, under this norm. Okay. And then, well, this T is okay, the same operators as before, except that now it looks more like an initial value problem. Okay. And so look at this, okay. This is the basic estimate, okay. And then, from that basic estimate, iterate a bit, okay. Throw in this, and then, well, the moment you minus, remember to, well, multiply by the correcting factors. But these two things together, okay, give you the norm of that. Okay. And, well, just integrate this. Of course, the integral of this is not that, but this is bigger. Okay? Slightly bigger. Okay. And, well, so, move these things over together with that, and then this is true for all x, and therefore you have this. Okay. There's an alpha here, so I'm looking at the alpha now of this. Sorry, I forgot about this alpha. So remember, we have chosen our alpha to be greater than 1. Okay? So, this thing is strictly less than this, well, by a constant which is less than 1. So we can apply Banach contraction theorem. Okay. Oh yeah. And actually, it comes from initial value problem. Okay. The conclusion actually comes from initial value problem, and here is where I use my intermediate value theorem. Okay. So, because of the fact that y minus z is continuous, and because of the fact that we assume our function to be measure to be non-negative, okay, you can find an x naught in between, such that this is equal. And so, well, just start with that x naught, you will get this estimate. So it follows immediately from initial value problem that we get the continuous dependence on average valley. Okay. Now, we can prove the case theorem 1.9. So let me remind you what is theorem 1.9. Okay, so that is the case when you have this, what we call the Lipschitz conditions, hold for the whole real line R, not just an interval J. Okay, so if you try to compare this in initial value problem, when we have these assumptions, we get assistance and uniqueness. Okay, unlike the case when we have a bounded intervals, then you have to, well, restrict yourself to something smaller. And the proof is, well, theorem 1.9, well, actually, there are a number of ways, okay, but I decided to use something simpler, okay. So this is what I did. Okay. So I prove it decided to do it something more elementary. Okay. So even though Schauder fixed point theorem is quite elementary, but some undergrad students probably never heard of it. Okay. So what I did is, well, I do Picard's iterations. Mm-hmm. Okay. So step one, well, we prove the theorem holds when this thing is less than one. So remember that when this thing is less than one, basically, you can make the Picard iteration will give you unique solutions. Okay. But the problem is, of course, in general, this thing, as I say, that we only assume this thing to be less than infinity. We didn't assume that this thing to be less than one. Okay. So what do we do? Well, actually, it's quite simple. In the first course on real analysis, this is what students learn. If the integral of W is finite, then you can always find a delta greater than zero such that this integral will be less than one. Okay? So, in step two, all we need to do is to decompose our AB into finite number of subintervals such that each of these subintervals will have length less than delta. And then on each of these small interval, you have assistance and uniqueness theorem, okay, like this. But of course, you don't expect each of these solutions will match perfectly. I mean, you can have one of them aiming too high, the other aiming too low, such that they don't touch each other. Okay, you can't hope for that. Okay, so what do we do? Well, actually, it's quite simple. You make use of the fact that the solution is continuously depending on the initial data. And again, we apply intermediate value theorem. That will guarantee that you can find a solution which actually match well two such intervals, and the moment you can connect any two neighbor intervals, you can do it until you get all. Okay, so okay, let me see. Sorry. So, well, theorem 4.1 is against, 1.11 against just typical p-cut iterations. And then this is this is what we call a slightly generalizations of the Laplacian operator that I'm talking about. But well, again, the generalization is pretty straightforward. So you don't have to worry about all these peculiar bound, because basically they just come in naturally when you prove it. It is just like ordinary differential equation. I mean, when you teach a course of ODE, you have this weird bound. Okay. And then, well, obviously I'm not going to prove that. And then, I think let me conclude this. This is the second last. Okay, here is another pretty classical theorem. This is Peano's uniqueness theorem. Okay, so suppose you know that this is continuous and non-increasing. Okay, the classical Peano's uniqueness theorem is of course deal with initial value problem. So I just change it to a probability measure. Okay. Then I get exactly the same conclusions as what it is. The conclusions of this is you can have at most one. Okay. Now you don't know whether there's any, but you can be sure that you can have at most one. Okay. Here is the final remark about So by the way, I mentioned that this type of boundary value problem, okay, is actually an average value problem. Now, how to see that? Well, of course, first of all, you change it to a system. Okay, so you look at R2. So first variable will be u, the second variable will be u prime, second equation will be about u prime. Okay, so what do you mean by u0 and u1 equal to 0? Okay, so you can rewrite the second equation as integral of u prime equal to 0. Okay, so and you can convert any boundary value problem in these fashions into an average value problem. But unfortunately, we do not have assistance and uniqueness as usual. Okay, and here is something that is probably pretty well known. Now, suppose f is continuous and satisfies these Lipschitz conditions. Now, it's known that this boundary value problem has a unique solution if this constant L happens to be less than pi squared. And well, and there are counter examples when L is equal to pi squared. And with that, I guess I end my talk. Okay. So it finally appeared here. I'm sorry. Thank you.